You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, and very happy to go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline and welcome in our friend from the NFL Network and NFL.com, Mike Silver. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. What's going on?
We're enjoying your Twitter rants about everything about Alabama football and so on and so forth so far today.
You know, I'm just trying to entertain myself.
So we can tell.
In the course of doing that, it's a lot to handle. But, Bama fans loving me. And oddly enough, Browns fans and I in a good place, so we'll see how it goes.
A very good place. I know for a while you were like Dikembe Mutombo on a blocking spree with Browns fans, so maybe the love will come back. But let's talk about your article, which is available, and we've been talking about it all show, NFL.com/33weeks, your chronicle of the first 33 weeks of Hugh Jackson's tenure. And this, obviously, I know it was very personal to you, Hugh, a good personal friend of yours, but was this one of those fun labors of love that you get the opportunity to do and that NFL.com allows you to do?
Well, reporting-wise, it was, but writing's just getting harder and harder. I don't know what it is. I think I'm just old. But, I did this a lot for Sports Illustrated for a lot of years.
Right.
Sometimes wrote really, really long. And I love seeing the finished product, and I'm really stoked that it's out. But the actual process was akin to somebody bleeding out over the course of, like, days and days and days.
But, well, we're glad you've survived.
I'm glad it's over.
So I want to start with where your article starts, and just talking about, you know, that first day. I had great pleasure and good fortune to be one of those people down there in the lobby when Hugh Jackson came in. And as an employee of this organization, that was a seminal moment to me as well, and something that I'll never forget. And we've talked about it a lot on air. Clearly also had a huge impact on Hugh Jackson. How surprised were you that that moment really has stuck with him like it did and what it symbolized for him?
You know, I'm not surprised. I remember talking to him about it in the aftermath, and, you know, I love that it's on video, which kind of helps us all relive it. But, I mean, if you understand what Oakland was and how hard that those last few months there were for him, it gives you a better perspective. He and Al Davis had grown real close, and Al kind of viewed him as the heir apparent, not only as the coach, but kind of the guy to take over a lot of what he was doing. And, you know, it was kind of a cool, poignant thing. And Al Davis is a guy who I feuded with for years and years and years. But on this issue, we definitely ended up sharing a common bond. And then Al passed away pretty early in that season, and there was no manual. And, you know, it's not like, oh, okay, well, the GM will just be the GM and the coach will be the coach. There was a chief executive, Amy Trask, who was very, very good at her job.
There was
a coach, Hugh Jackson, but there was no real GM, and there was not a traditional personnel department. There were defensive coaches that Al had put in place that Hugh had not hired, and then you throw in the sudden injury to Jason Campbell, who had playing at a Pro Bowl level at that point. He had been the offensive coordinator the year before, so it was their second year together. And Darren McFadden, who was an MVP candidate when he went down. And all of a sudden, you've got a guy who knows he's coaching for his future, uncertain of what that future is. Certainly no close relationship with Mark Davis, Al's son, who was suddenly the man in charge. And he took a swing with Carson Palmer, which, you know, I live in Northern California. People still brutalize Hugh Jackson for that trade. First of all, I don't know any coach in football who wouldn't have taken that swing under those circumstances.
Sure.
Secondly, I think when you see Carson Palmer now, you kind of get a sense of what they might have been able to do together. But, you know, they came very, very close to going to the playoffs, and then all of a sudden, boom, he was out. But, you know, the short answer is he felt very, very alone in those months. He and Amy Trask kind of bunkered against not only the world, but a lot of forces in that organization. And so then you juxtapose that with Jimmy Haslam flying or having a second interview with Hugh Jackson during one of the most important owners' meetings in history, really, to decide LA in Houston. And Jimmy Haslam decides, you know what, I'm going to try to lock down this Hugh Jackson thing instead of being at that meeting. A rival owner likened to breaking the Christmas truce during a war, kind of half jokingly. But, you know, that's how important it was to him. And then to have Jimmy come pick him up in his plane, fly him back, and have Dee at the door, not only there to greet him, but having, you know, orchestrated just that awesome welcome. You know, sometimes these little touches, they seem cheesy to people on the outside, and, you know, people have no idea how poignant they are when you really live them. I said the same thing when Eddie DeBartolo just went in the hall, and he used to stand at the tunnel and hand towels to players coming off the field. And that seems like the most trite thing ever when I say it, but I'm telling you, to these guys who were out there, it told them, I recognize that you are the ones sweating for me, and it went a long, long way.
It does. And Michael, I'm always the same way that you can watch film to understand, you know, what a team is. For Browns fans right now, who especially, you know, after kind of a bad beat and a bad game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there are a lot of things in question. You trade away Andy Lee, you've traded away Barkevious Mingo in the last couple weeks, and people are questioning what's going on. Is it safe to say that if a Browns fan wanted to go back and watch that Raiders team coached by Hugh Jackson, the way they played, how they, you know, overcome obstacles and exceeded expectation, would that give them a little bit of a taste of what Hugh Jackson's going to be like once the games actually start this year and over the next few years as they corral in and really reel in what the Cleveland Browns organization is right now and is going to be in the coming years?
Well, first of all, I think we all need to pause and take a moment and acknowledge that the Browns just got a fourth-round draft pick for a punter! And we're not talking about a team that, like Carolina, thinks they might be a punter away from winning it all. We're talking about a rebuilding team, got a four for a punter. So, you know, Sashi and Paul and them took a beating back in at the start of the league year, and I may or may not have contributed to that perception. But I got to stop and give these guys a lot of respect right now. They got a four for a punter. So unless you've got a punter who can make the ball explode upon impact or who can force a fumble every single time with some weird spin, I'll take the four. What those Raider teams did, and all, you know, they more than doubled their point total when he took over as offensive coordinator the previous year and took the offensive reins from then head coach Tom Cable, which is why Al Davis after that season said, you know what, I'm just making you the head coach. But remember, if you look at those Raider teams from 2010 and then 2011, those were not Hugh's defensive coaches. Oddly enough, had he stayed, he was poised to bring a certain defensive coordinator to run his defense, Jack Del Rio. So it's funny how things come full circle. But, you know, now he's got Ray Horton and guys that he has hired. But on those Raider teams, what I saw were guys being blocked off the screen, literally, and, you know, a big, powerful offensive line and a fearsome running attack with Darren McFadden and Michael Bush and a quarterback who played better than he did at any other point in his career, Jason Campbell, balls going downfield and receivers having what turned out to be career years who have kind of dropped off the map ever since, from Denarius Moore to Jacoby Ford to Darius Heyward-Bey. So one thing that Hugh Jackson does is, yes, he has a system. Yes, he is an innovative offensive mind, but he tailors that system to meet the talents of the people he coaches. So I think that's the first thing that Browns fans can take comfort in. And I don't know, you know, I assume they saw the Bengals enough to understand what a good play caller he is. He does a lot with formation and motion. He gets into incredible rhythms. You know, I would liken it to Norv Turner or Sean Payton or some of these guys that when they get in rhythm, it's just a sight to behold. And I think between the play calling and just the flat out mentality, you know, I look at a guy like Joel Bitonio and I think, man, you're just going to be, you know, mauling people again, and it's going to be awesome.
It certainly will. Talk with Mike Silver, and I'm sure you know that voice from NFL Network. NFL.com wrote a great article about Hugh Jackson's first 33 weeks as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And Mike, I just want to ask you, since you know him very well, it seemed to me, you know, we were just down there in Tampa. The Browns had this great week of practice. They looked very good. And then the game came out. and I think it stunned Hugh Jackson a little bit. What was kind of his mindset after that game, and where does he feel that this team is right now?
Well, I know he doesn't like losing. So, right. You know, some coaches would say, I literally do not care about the score in the preseason. It just doesn't matter to me. But, my sense is you come into a situation like this, you want to give the players a sense that things are different, and you want them to experience a win or a real crisp performance or both. So I know he's frustrated, and, you know, he's kind of going down these parallel paths, emotionally. He understands on a rational level what the plan is, and he is 100% on board, rebuilding, building it over the long haul, building something that will last, sustaining it, not going for the quick fix, and being willing to have some patience. He's 100% on board, but he also is somebody who has immense faith in his ability to motivate and scheme, and so that coupled with the fact that he just detests losing, which is a good thing, yeah. I think in the back of his mind he's kind of going, I'll find a way to have it not be bad early. So, you know, it's a tough thing, and really it's akin to what fans go through, because fans don't want to hear, hey, it's going to take a few years, especially when it's been such a lean amount of years. I mean, I know as a Cal fan, and believe me, they came very, very, very close to hiring Hugh Jackson 3 years ago, and, think about it a lot. So I know nobody wants to hear, hey, it's going to take a few years. And it's funny hearing from Raider fans, as I do, about how awesome it is. We'll see. They have a lot of promise, but they tore it up. They tore it down and built it up and went 18-46 over 4 years after Hugh Jackson, after his 8-8. They rewarded the guy who did that, Reggie McKenzie, with a contract extension. And I guess it's all good now if the Raiders go 10-6 and make the playoffs. So I would just hope that all the critics in Oakland would look at what the Browns are doing and give Hugh Jackson 1/8 of that consideration if the Browns don't win right away.
Yes, absolutely, Michael. And the one thing I want to dive into just a little bit further, and it was, you know, referenced multiple times in your article very, very well, I just want to dive in, because that's the one thing, this behind-the-scenes look is so cool, is how close was Hugh to staying in Cincinnati to become the heir apparent? And then also, how intriguing was the opportunity to be the head football coach of the New York Giants? Because we know as Browns fans that, you know, he kind of canceled that flight that Wednesday to head to New York.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very emotional time because, remember, it had been a long 4 years. And he knew those last few weeks of the regular season that he was probably going to be getting some looks. And so, of course, his head was spinning. And, it's kind of a tough thing to answer, because how close? Because what I think happened is, once Jimmy actually called him and said those words, I want you to be the head coach, it just changed everything. It was like the life raft he'd been looking for 4 years. And I don't think it hit him until that moment that, wow, these opportunities are really, really rare. And I can weigh one against the other, or think about, you know, how I wish it had gone down timing wise. But when he actually heard those words, I just think it hit him like, you know, these are owners who believe in me. I connect with them. I believe in the people they've hired to try to rebuild this thing, and I'm up for the challenge. But, you know, before that call came, and I think it was first going to come Wednesday morning and then came later in the day, he was a complete mess. And in the middle of the night, we had a conversation, and he was very, very, warm to the idea of staying in Cincinnati. And I think he was just tired and emotionally drained. And at one point we talked Wednesday morning, and he didn't want to get on the plane to New York. This is assuming there had been no Browns offered, you know, that day. He didn't even want to go. He's like, I'm done. I don't want to do another interview. And I kind of had to, you know, yell at him a little bit and go, dude, you've been waiting 4 years. Get your butt on that plane, pack a suit, and go do an interview if that's what it takes. It's the New York Giants. But it just, once that phone call came, it just all changed. It's like the sky's cleared, and he I think he was too stunned to scream his approval right away, but once it hit home, he was pretty stoked.
You talked in the article about him saying that RG3's workout was the best quarterback workout he's seen since Carson Palmer coming out of USC, which we'd heard about, the ground move beneath his feet and all of that. But that a very strong statement there. How pleased is he with the development of RG3, who certainly is showing a lot of positive signs in the preseason?
Well, I think he's pleased, but, he knows it's a marriage and it's a work in progress, and he holds himself to a high standard there. So it's not how he feels about RG3, it's how he feels about his connection with RG3 and how they together are, tackling this. And with Andy Dalton, there was a huge jump from year one to year two, and they had a pretty good year one together.
Yes.
So, I think it's a work in progress. But, yeah, that workout, it's amazing. I had been on a plane, and he texted me and said, hey, can you talk? And I said, I'll call you when I land. And when I called him, he started telling me about this workout, and we had talked a lot about Jared Goff. I'm a Cal guy.
Hey, I'm a huge Jared Goff guy.
Yeah, and I and so is you. And I know Jared real well, and we spent a lot of time talking about him. And Hugh started telling me about this workout. It was kind of loud in the airport, and for the first couple minutes, I thought he was talking about Jared.
Uh-huh.
And finally, I realized he was talking about Robert, and I was kind of like, whoa, because like many, many people, even people, in talent evaluator and coach circles, I believed that he was not the same player that he had been. Not
yeah.
just that he had struggled, but that the knee had never been right, and he just, he kind of lost it. But, what he was telling me was, nah, he looks amazing. And so that really did change everything, because I think if he didn't have a guy he was that blown away by who he thought could play now, he would have been a lot more stressed about possibly losing out on Jared Goff, and probably would have wanted to hedge to the bet by going from 2-1, or had the Rams jumped up and gotten the first pick, it would have been a real, real bummer. So I think if Jared Goff had been there at 2, he probably would have been real happy to have Jared Goff and Robert on that team, but Robert gave him a much different mentality.
If they had gotten Jared Goff here, does that mean you would have had to take up a residence here with your connection to Hugh and Jared?
Yeah, pretty much. Although, it's hard for me. I feel like I'm going to be back there a lot during the fall and hopefully the winter, and then definitely in June
in
again.
In June, that's
because,
right. For the
we do seem to be heading down that path.
We certainly do.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that with Durant now?
I don't even know what to say. I mean, the team that I grew up rooting for, that is coached by one of my childhood friends, that is really, really, really good, just signed a 6'11" guy who plays like a wing and defends ridiculously, and I think missed like 2 free throws during the playoffs. So, I'm sure the Cavs are going to be big and strong and fearsome again. So I hope there's a rematch. It'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. It'll be epic. One thing I do want to ask you as a Warriors fan, because I grew up in the Bay Area, I think as we've talked about before, and so I was, Run TMC days. That's what I grew up with. And I was
Love
a big
it.
Warriors fan, and I was a Warriors warrior during the Don Nelson era and everything like that. But Steph Curry, back-to-back MVP of the NBA, of the National Basketball Association. I, as just a basketball fan, and maybe he was more banged up than it was led on to be, was very surprised at his performance in the NBA Finals. And I wonder if there is going to be some kind of a hangover with him about that, especially with Durant coming in, because it does kind of change, who's the alpha? How does that all shake out?
Well, as with Hugh Jackson, I am good friends with a coach and can only, say so much. But, yes, he was more banged up than probably we know, and I have total faith that remember, even while banged up, the guy scored 19 points in an overtime in a key game against Portland.
So, and said, "I'm back."
Credit to the Cavs for helping to neutralize him, and I think it's his team. I think he'll be the guy. Obviously, they have 3 other guys who are phenomenal, but I don't want to I don't want it to sound like I'm.
No. That's not what I was saying.
Because listen, you know, Kyrie went down the year before, and that was crushing, and they didn't have Kevin Love. So
sure.
you do what you can. I feel like it was there for the Warriors to take, and I feel like they were about to take it, and then that block and that dagger three were just, you can't beat that. That was amazing.
I mean, has there ever been an NBA season that you've been wishing to get over with so that we can get to the finals rematch, which I think everybody in the basketball world wants to see? No offense to any of the other teams. Russell Westbrook. I don't think Westbrook has any interest in that matchup, but everybody else wants to see it.
I want the Browns to win, the Cavs to win 74 this year, and, I'm gonna enjoy this season too, because how fun for Cleveland to experience a defense of a championship, and you know I think the Warriors will be. It'll probably take them a while to figure it out, but I think they're gonna be in great shape. And look, maybe somebody else will come surprise us. Didn't Derrick Rose say the Knicks were a super team? So
he did. Come on,
yes, he did.
Don't know if I'm seeing that, but hey, as long as the Cavs are healthy and the Warriors are healthy, it's going to be really tough to see either of those teams not getting there.
It is. And Michael, last one real quick. You've documented the first 33 weeks of Hugh Jackson's tenure here with the Cleveland Browns. Will you be continuing to do something like that because of, you know, your friendship with Hugh and as you said, being back here as frequently as you will in the coming months?
Well, I hope so. As I said, writing is real tough, so it may not always be in this format, but I appreciate the people who stuck with me. I know it's a different world, so people knew I was in Cleveland, and on Twitter they were like, what'd you think of this? What'd you think of the Browns? And I'm like, be patient.
Wait.
Eventually you're going to get a lot of words. I would imagine that I will be writing and talking about it quite a bit, and, you know, I'll try to let it breathe a little bit because I do recognize the plan, and you know, now that I've gotten to talk to Sashi and Paul and kind of, get to know them and hear their thoughts, I definitely get it. But, I just have this feeling with the Browns that, I said this last time, that it's going to click in late in the season and they're going to have a game or two where people just go, whoa. And
that's
so
right.
I want to be at that game.
Yes, we want you to be at that game as well, Mike. Very much appreciative of your time. Great work, and certainly nice to have, somebody in the media focusing on the Browns and being positive. And the one thing I know that you know Hugh Jackson better than anybody, that I've been kind of arguing with people, because Browns fans after that game, and obviously Kruger gets released, and there are a lot of people like, they're tanking, they want to win no games and get the first overall pick. And I said, then you guys don't know Hugh Jackson. So I made the statement that if the Browns organization told Hugh Jackson, we are going to win zero games this year, that he would quit, that he would not in any, that's just not how his DNA is wired. Do you agree with that?
I think his head would just explode first and he wouldn't have to quit because he'd be cleaning it up off the floor. So, I like I said, it's a weird thing. I think it is, even in his own mind, he's taking these parallel paths, and he's smart enough to understand what's going on and totally be behind it. But, once he gets in that room Saturday night and on that sideline Sunday, he's going to try to find a way to kick someone's butt. And it would be really cool to see them respond.
Certainly will be. Mike, certainly appreciate the time. And we want you on the show as much as possible. So we appreciate it. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, you guys. Great talking.
Thank
you.
All right.
Mike Silver. Fantastic stuff. A lot of fun there. Read the article, NFL.com/33 weeks. The funny thing about that is we just talked to him for 25 minutes, basically. I had like 20 more questions I wanted to ask him about you, about himself. Because one of the things, and I didn't get an opportunity to ask him about, but I'm curious, is he's obviously very much in with Hugh. He's also been in the St. Louis, now Los Angeles Rams draft room, I believe 2 years in a row, and is very much entrenched with them. And I know that he knew Hugh loved Jared Goff and probably wanted the Browns to get Jared Goff for a variety of reasons. But he also is friendly with the Rams and knew when they moved up that they were getting Jared Goff. And that's got to be a difficult situation for him. And maybe we'll talk about this with him next time we talk with Mike Silver. But, the Browns knew the Rams were moving up for Goff. And I'm not saying from Mike Silver. I'm saying I think anybody around the NFL at the end of the day ultimately realized that Goff was the guy.
Yes.
Despite what was being talked about with Wentz. So if you remember, they moved out of that number two spot well before draft day.
Yes, they did.
And I think that that gave them the moves. It was interesting to note, you and I had talked about this as well, that he notes that had DeForest Buckner in the article been on the board at eight, the Browns would have likely stayed at eight and taken DeForest Buckner.
Right.
Which changes a lot about this team, because then there probably isn't a Corey Coleman, but maybe at 32 they take Sterling Shepard, who we knew that they were very high on. So ultimately it'll be fun to kind of watch the parallel paths of, you know, Corey Coleman plus the future two that you get from Tennessee versus and Agba versus maybe a DeForest Buckner, Sterling Shepard. So three players for two you're still getting. Actually, and I think they've got a future fourth or fifth as well. It'll just be an interesting thing to see how that all plays out and how it shakes out. But great stuff with Mike Silver. Certainly very appreciative of his time as well. And we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. If you missed it, we just had a great long interview with Mike Silver. Not as long as his article on Hugh Jackson at NFL.com/33weeks, but still long all the same. We want to hear from you guys, 216-578-0850. Of course, tweet your questions to us using the hashtag AskCBD, and we will go into that mailbag soon because that mailbag is getting ready, and we got our man Danny looking into it. But now let's hear from Nate Orchard, a guy who certainly will be playing a big role for this team and is now really the most tenured guy in that outside linebacker room for the Browns, which is crazy as he enters only his second season.
It's hard, you know, to see someone like that go, especially, you know, Paul. I mean, the moment I got here last year, he was a mentor to me, got really close to him like a brother, and I mean, to see him depart, it sucks, but at the end of the day, it's all part of the business. Wish him the best, and wherever he goes, I know he's gonna succeed, and he has for a long time in this league, and so wish him the best, and we're gonna miss him.
What did you learn from him?
So many things. How to be a pro, first of all, especially in this league. You know, you gotta learn how to take care of yourself on and off the field, and being a student of the game.
Is it a blow when you lose kind of a leader like that, somebody that you young guys turn to mentor you through?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we got guys that'll step up. You know, we have our inside linebackers, DeMario, who's done a phenomenal job of leading us. You got Joe Hayden on the outside. And myself, you know, need to step up in that outside linebacker room and then take leadership.
Nate, they obviously the team, you know, started a youth movement. You know, Dansby was gone, Whitner's gone, but that was earlier in the off season. To see Paul go through all of training camp with you guys was a bit shocking to see it, the timing of this, the way it unfolded.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's out of my control, and you know. Trying to understand what they're doing upstairs. You know, I can do is control what I can control on the field, off the field, and put forth my best effort in all that I do. You know, as far as the youth movement, I mean, you can see that they're constantly bringing guys in, no matter what team you're playing on. And there's always going to be younger guys up there. And so at the end of the day, it's all part of the business.
Nate, do you feel you and Agbar are now the foundation of the pass rush on this?
I mean, at the end of the day, we got a lot of guys up front that can make big plays, especially in that outside linebacker room. Whether or not he's, you know, going to be there, you know, that's coach's decision. But no matter where he ends up on defense, whether it's DN or outside linebacker, he's gonna do some great things.
Nate, does something like this make you think about your own immortality as a football player? You know, that if you cut a guy like Kruger, nobody is. Maybe long term.
Yeah, like I said, it's the business of what the NFL is. You know, the average career is what, 3 years or so, and for him to be in here 8-9 years already, I mean, that's a successful career, and that's something I'm shooting for. And like I said, he was a great mentor to me and someone I looked up to. Till this day, I still do, and that lasts for a very long time.
Hey, there haven't been a lot of sacks in the preseason from the number one defense. How would you describe the state of the pass rush right now? Is it evolving?
It's a process. You know, we got guys that are very, very capable of making it back there. It's just little things as far as angles. I mean, it's a game of angles and, you know, having the right lanes. You know, there's so many times we were there, we had them, we just couldn't bring them down. So little things like that we need to just take care of, and at the end of the day, I know we'll be a successful defense.
Nate, is it concerning to you that now you're the only outside linebacker here with any sacks in the NFL?
No, not at all. I mean, we got guys, like I said, that can do some big things for us. And so once the season gets rolling around, I know we're gonna make a big difference.
I just walked up, and this may have been asked, and I apologize if it has, but a surprise to you that Kruger is no longer in uniform here?
You know, that's a tough question because, I mean, at the end of the day, I think that's surprising to all of us to see him go because he's someone that was close to so many of us, especially that outside linebacker who was a big brother to us. And it was shocking. But like I said to these guys, at the end of the day, it's a business and something, you know, that's out of your control.
There's a veteran presence that is lost in that. And how important is that to the young people on this team?
To grow up, we got to grow up real fast. You know, before he left, he was a mentor to a lot of us and left the foundation and something we can build upon. Having DeMario, that middle outside linebacker, he really sets the tone for all of us.
Did you get a chance to?
You had 18 and a half sacks, I think, your last year at Utah. Agba had 12, I think, his last year. Do you think that's the greatest indicator that you're going to have success rushing passer in the NFL now that you've been through it 1 year?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, once you have success in college, you know, coming into the league, you know, obviously the guy's a lot bigger, faster, but at the end of the day, you know, where you come from is who you are. So you just need to continue to build upon that. You know, you're going to have to fine-tune techniques and things like that. But it's something you shouldn't look away from and shy, even if you have, you know, a season with three sacks like myself. I wanted to have more. But I know I can keep getting better and keep building upon that.
Did you get a chance to talk to Paul?
I haven't. I had him. I shot him a text this morning. I got to go check my phone to see if I heard back from him. But no, I haven't had a chance.
So he tweeted out that something to the effect this morning that he felt this was – ill-advised. You think that's just personal, or at this point, what would you read into that?
I mean, that's something that's up to the coaches, you know. At the end of the day, like I said, it was shocking to see him go, and we're going to miss him.
That's Nate Orchard talking right now about the departure of Paul Kruger and what they have to do in that outside linebacker room. Let's go now to the phone lines quickly. We've got Dino the Trucker. Dino, welcome.
Hey, guys, how we doing today?
Good, man.
Good.
Hey, you know, I was listening a little bit of about that guy talking about you. And I'll tell you something that I've noticed about our new coach. This guy really shows that he don't want to lose. I don't care if it's preseason or not. This guy is a competitor. And I can say that much about him because I haven't seen him in the previous coaching regimes. The intensity that I'm seeing in this fella, man, because he is just – all out. He don't want to lose. He just don't want to lose. It's just not his vocabulary.
No, he does not want to lose.
That's something that's infectious, you know, and he could bring that to the rest of the team just by his actions alone. You know, and that's something that I think Browns fans are going to be pleasantly surprised that he's going to be aching just with the rest of us, you know, about how we want to have a winner in this city when it comes to football.
Oh, it will certainly hurt him, and I think you make a very good point. We appreciate the call, Dino. I think Mike Silver said it best. If he was told to tank, his head would explode, so he wouldn't have to quit because he'd be dead. Let's go to the phone, 216-578-0850. Kenny in Portsmouth, welcome to the show. Kenny, are you there? Kenny? Okay, all right. We don't have Kenny in Portsmouth then. 216-578-0850 to call us up. For now, we will take our final break. When we come back, we're going to get into the mailbag. Lots of questions I've seen coming in. So get those questions. If you have any ones left, either call us 216-578-0850 or tweet us using the hashtag AskCBD as we wrap it up here on this hump day edition of Cleveland Browns Daily.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. We go now to the phone lines. 216-578-0850. Kenny in Portsmouth is back. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hey, sorry about that. My fat sheet hit the mute button on my phone.
No, that's okay, problem, man. It happens.
So, hey, I appreciate everything you guys do. I'm between here and Florida, and you guys keep me up to date on what's going on.
Awesome.
I just want to see a bunch of improvement this year. Can I ask a fantasy question?
Of course.
I'm in a non-PPR league. I was going to tweet you, but I'm afraid my buddies would snowball me.
Okay.
I'm picking third. I'm up in the arms between Cam Newton, Todd Gurley, or Peterson.
Definitely not Cam Newton. I would say from that trio, I would say Gurley. Too many good quarterbacks to
Peterson
take a quarterback
just lost
that early.
Teddy Bridgewater, which is going to change that offense, too.
Right.
Yes. Yes. But, hey, like I said, I appreciate everything you guys do, and thanks for that advice.
All right, awesome. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Jim in Cleveland now. Jim, welcome.
Thank you. Has there ever been an NFL team in, say, the last 70, 80 years since the 30s, whether they played 12, 14, or 16 games, that lost every game? Because I think the Browns have got a great chance for that. Has there been?
That have gone 0-16?
0-16.
Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions.
Did.
Like what, how, 5 years ago?
How long ago?
More than that. 7 years ago?
Within the last 10 years.
Okay.
Have there been others aside from that?
No, because when I believe when the Buccaneers did it, it was 2008.
And who else won? Someone won 1-15 in the last decade.
And the Bucs went 0-14 at one point.
Right.
Yeah. I just don't see that happening. I'd be happy to place a gentleman's wager on whether or not the Browns go 0-16.
And for Hugh Jackson, his head's going to explode.
We can't have that. Mike in Northern California. Mike, welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys. That was great. Hugh Jackson's head's going to explode.
Yeah, we don't want that. That's heavy, man. That's heavy.
You know, my comment is that two things, well, a lot of things, but I didn't like some of the things the way it just seemed like the old Brown still in some ways. Of course, the long ball, awesome, but I started when I relooked at the game, the tape. I got a little bit more positive. I saw positive things, so it was interesting. But I mean, it seems to me that the running game is successful. I think we should experiment the Chicago game. Just run the ball. Don't even pass. Don't even bother. See what happens.
Yeah, it's a little choppy there. Appreciate the call, Mike. But, yeah, it's definitely been – I think we've seen good things from Crow the last couple of weeks, honestly, in the preseason, and Duke Johnson as well. So I think that this running game is going to be a bigger part of the offense in the regular season than we're seeing right now. The Browns just haven't been on the field enough. That's been part of it. Part of it's because of the big play offense, and part of it because that defense can't get off of the field. And that's been a big, big problem in terms of the number of plays that the offense has gotten versus the defense. I mean, it's funny. One of those things that, you know, you look at and you look at snaps, et cetera, and for the Cleveland Browns, the defensive side of the football, you have guys playing massive amounts of snaps. And on the offensive side, because they've basically been double snapped up. And so when you look at the leaders in snaps on the Browns on offense and defense here in the preseason this season, on the offense, your leader in snaps is Caleb Johnson, an offensive lineman, at 90. On the defense, Agba's played 137 snaps. You have multiple guys. Agba, Nassib at 128 snaps. You have multiple guys over 100 snaps on the defensive side of the ball because they've been there. Five guys have played more than 100 snaps on defense. Another three have played more than 90 snaps on defense. On offense, nobody's played more than 90 snaps. Caleb Johnson, that's it. Only four guys have played more than 80 snaps, more than 75 snaps. Caleb Johnson, Pastor Bailey, and Garth Gerhardt. So they just have not been on the field enough.
Well, and I think for Nassib and Agba, and the case for them playing that many snaps is, they're the two guys that have made the biggest splash and taken advantage of the opportunity, and they're probably the two defensive guys that we're going to have to rely on most this season. So this is the trial by fire that all offseason, once we had the draft and we got so young by drafting 14 guys, adding, you know, Jamar Taylor as well, the trial, that's what I'm talking about, the trial by fire. These guys need to figure out the speed, the schemes, you know, getting their cleats in the ground, all the little nuances that they're and techniques that these coaches are asking them to perform. And for Agba's case, and even Nassim's case for that matter, it's, you know, Nassim's been on the end as an end in a 4-3. He's been a 3 technique. He's been a 5 technique along that defensive front. So he's playing multiple positions. He needs to learn and experience the NFL game in those different positions so he can react quicker when it matters. And in Agba's case, he's gone outside linebacker, then D-line, now back to outside linebacker.
Yeah.
And you want him to be as impactful as he possibly can. We need to hone in on one spot for this young guy.
Yes, we do. All right, let's bring in our producer, Danny Cunningham, right now. Danny, when you look at the mailbag, when you look in there, what are the Browns fans saying right now, Dustin, the mailbag, Danny?
In the mailbag, the first question that pops up is from Brian Vaughn. Do you think there's a surprise rookie that could get cut? And is there a surprise veteran still remaining that could get cut?
A surprise veteran that could get... A veteran, Matt Wilhelm!
A surprise veteran. It may not, whoever it's going to be may not come as all that much of a surprise. I don't necessarily have a name on the tip of my tongue, but I mean, I'd say maybe a guy like Marlon Moore, you know, who's been, you know, injured and obviously not getting the reps at wide receiver, specifically going to be on special teams once the regular season starts because of our depth at wide receiver. He may be a guy that doesn't make this football team. He's going to be a guy that, if active tomorrow night, needs to make an impact and reassure Chris Tabor so that Chris Tabor can stand on the table and say, I need this guy to Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown.
Yes. So to me, the veteran that might be a surprise cut, I think they're the one that really sticks out to me is maybe Raheem Moore. Not that he's a veteran of the Cleveland Browns, but if the numbers game is such that they want Don Jones as the fourth safety and they're only keeping 4 safeties with the emergence of Kindred and Jordan Poyer's ability to play both sides, and now they're thinking Kindred can play both positions, that maybe a pure free safety like Raheem Moore, he'd be a veteran that could be, potentially be on the bubble. I think he makes a team, but I'm just saying we're looking for somebody to list.
We got one more from Brian here, and he also wants to know, obviously Nathan's the fantasy guru of the show, but does Wilhelm play fantasy too?
I am in one league and one league only, and I got a little preoccupied last night and missed my draft, so I was auto-drafted. But the only fantasy league that I play in, it's not with friends, it's not as a part of Nathan's leagues or anything, it's an NFL-sanctioned former player fantasy league. So it's like 8 different divisions with 10 guys in every division, but all guys are former players from the NFL. So only want to take part.
There it is. All right. Want to thank Mike Silver. Great get by Gibbs for us here today on the show. Tomorrow we'll let you know what to look at in this game Thursday night, the final preseason tune-up for the Cleveland Browns against Chicago Bears, 8 o'clock, First Energy Stadium. Want to thank our producer, Danny Cunningham, for being with us today as well, and each and every one of you for your calls and your tweets. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. For Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.